All right, friends, I need you to stick with me this week. We're doing a slight pivot in the topic of marketing. Normally, I am giving y'all the exact steps of how you need to implement and do your own marketing. But this week, I am bringing somebody on who is such a brilliant individual who will be able to provide you another option, another way to get the message and the story and the connection of your brand out into the marketplace. As you're going to see, I'm going to talk about like right now during pandemics, even more important, but it's important anytime at all. I have the founder and CEO of Obviously, which is a leading global influencer. Don't freak out, but global influencer marketing agency and technology platform. Don't click away. I know many times when people hear the word influencer, they're like, ah. No, you are going to see, and we are going to bust through the misconceptions about global influencers, because under May's leadership, since she lost his agency in 2014, this has become the global standard of influencer marketing. This is going to be a way that your brand, your business can utilize other marketing paths to connect with consumers. It is a way to take some of the pressure off of you. And right now, that's what we need more than anything in 2020, is to take a little bit off our plate. So I am having May come on to tell you guys step by step how to utilize influencer marketing. We have real life examples. I share about my own examples of how I am involved in this sphere of marketing. So let's do this. Let's jump right in.
Welcome to the Business Bites Podcast, the podcast for busy entrepreneurs. Whether you are an online entrepreneur or seeking after brick and mortar success, this podcast brings you quick bites of content so you can learn and grow anywhere you are. Now here's your host, Rachel Brainke.
Hey friends, welcome to another week of the Business Bites Podcast, where we get quick and busy in information to help you leverage and grow your business. This week, I'm joined with May Karwowski to talk about using influencer marketing. Now, before y'all click away going, oh, it's not for me, I know there are some of you that are brands that are really gun shy about putting yourself front and center, but you're also trying to figure out how to market. Well, guess what? Influencer marketing and social media is where you need to be, and May is going to bring all this awesome content for y'all this week. So May, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Rachel.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I absolutely love your topic. You know, it's one of these things I feel like a lot of times solopreneurs get so focused in. They have to wear 500 hats, and we also have to be perfect on social media. And, you know, how do we even continue growing? And influencer marketing is so crucial, especially now. We're recording this during pandemic, and so many places have either still been in lockdown or they're getting ready to go back into it. And what are we all doing? We're scrolling through social media.
Exactly.
Influencer stuff. So before we get into the hard-hitting content and information for our listeners, tell me a little bit about you and how you got into this space.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm the CEO and founder of Obviously. I started this influencer marketing company around 7 years ago now. We're a team of 40. We're based in New York, San Francisco, LA. We have an office in Paris. We work with really large brands and really cool new up-and-coming brands, from everything like Ulta and Sephora to Google. I started the company. I was doing a lot in social media management, so I definitely know when a solo entrepreneur is like, hey, I don't have time to post to Instagram or LinkedIn. Like, I 100% get that. It is really, really time-consuming. It used to be my full-time job. From there, I saw, whoa, there are all these awesome creators who are organically building their own audiences. Like, what if I paired those people with brands and had them talk about brands they love and care about? It'd be a real huge positive for the influencers for growing their career, and also for the brands to really get in front of a new audience.
So that's incredible, hearing about all the places where your business is and the people that you're working with, companies that you're working with. How did you get to that? How did you grow it? Did you come into this just naturally, or what was kind of the path to getting to that point?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long road, it feels like. At least it's been a lot of hard work and really listening to clients' needs and really studying the market. Influencer marketing has changed so much in the past few years. I mean, honestly, every 6 months it changes quite a bit. So there's always a ton of research. I'm always talking to brands, finding out what they want, what they're willing to pay for, what they're not willing to pay for, what they're seeing value in, what they're not seeing value in. And then really using that to make sure that we have the right offering for them.
So before we dig into the main points that we have that are going to be great and actionable for our listeners to take away and implement now, define influencer marketing. And I wasn't going to have you do this initially because I felt like we kind of all have this idea of what it is. But then you just said like the key thing, it changes every 6 months. So how do we even identify what that current state of influencer marketing is? How do you define it?
Yeah, so really broadly, an influencer is a creator on a social platform who has organically grown their audience. And so we work with people who are quite small. You know, their nano influencers can have, you know, 2,000, 3,000 followers on a given platform, all the way up to macro influencers. You know, they might have over 1 million followers. They'll have a talent agent and they'll have, you know, a whole business behind them at that point. And we work with influencers who are really small to those who are really big. And the whole industry of influencer marketing is pairing the right influencers who reach the right audiences with the right brands, and then making sure that it's a really smart strategic partnership. So the content that the influencer is creating, you know, talking about, hey, I love Tide detergent, really lands correctly with their audience. So it's making sure they're telling a story that's authentic to them, but also hits on the key objectives of the brand at the same time to drive a business result for the brand. And it's a hugely growing industry. I mean, it's like doubling year over year. It's going to be like a $25 billion industry by next year. And I think we all know like the term influencer now, compared to even, you know, 5 years ago, people are like, what are you talking about? What are you doing?
Well, and I'm glad you said that because I feel like sometimes the use of the term influencer can have almost a visceral negative reaction, especially from those that have been in business and pounding the pavement. So what are some of the biggest and most frequent misconceptions about influencer marketing and social media? Because here, I'm trying to convince my audience a little bit. They all need another avenue of marketing, and now is a fantastic time to do it. So let's break these misconceptions for them.
Definitely. So I think one big misconception is, you know, people immediately think of the Kardashians. And they think, okay, like someone who is like a crazy lifestyle, lives in Los Angeles, you know, is really glamorous, and is all about, you know, surface level aesthetics and has like millions and millions of followers and lives this crazy life. Actually, like most of the influencers we work with, you know, it's a mom who homeschools her kids, or it's someone who's really into knitting, or it's someone who's really into mountain biking, you know, and a brand wants to get in front of an audience who also really cares about mountain biking. So it's actually finding real people who have built real audiences, and they're building careers and they're building businesses themselves. You know, we work with a lot of influencers. I have one influencer, M Wing on Instagram, and, you know, she was a graphic designer at an agency. She now is doing this full time. She's making like an incredible business out of, like just documenting her own life and her two dogs. And she's, you know, has a partnership with Hallmark now, and her dogs are on like real best-selling Hallmark holiday cards.
Aww.
You know, it's like, it's actually a real venue and a real way for people to support themselves and their families. And it's really cool.
Because I think that's one of the things oftentimes you hear influencer, you automatically, at least for me, in my mind, snaps to, you know, the perfect put together blonde with her little pumpkin spice latte and her Uggs, yeah, or, you know, the Kardashians or all of that. And as you're talking, you're like, it could be a normal person. And I'm sitting here. I just jumped out of my workout to come do this interview. I'm still in sweaty workout clothes with a sweater over top because I'm shivering in my office with a top knot, right? Yeah. And so I love to know that no matter what your story is, you can be an influencer. And as a brand looking to authentically get in the way of consumers, because I think that's one of the hard parts for many entrepreneurs is they look at influencers, you know, and like you're saying, like with Kardashians, there's this stigma of, oh, you know, there's no connection, they're untouchable. How would I want them connected to my brand? And I love that you brought that example that her dogs are on Hallmark cards, you know, and it's just documenting her life because, and I've talked on other episodes, everyone has a story and story is what sells, especially during pandemic for sure. So I love that's the biggest misconception. Can you think of any other misconception that may go along with it? If not, we can truck on to the next.
Yep. I think another big thing is that you have to have 1 million followers to be an influencer. A majority of the work that we're doing is with influencers who have between 10,000 and 50,000 followers. And then we're working with 100 influencers of that size, or 200 or 1,000 influencers of that size. And And we're not working with small brands either. I mean, if you're an influencer and you have 20,000 followers, you could be working with Nike, you know, you could be working with Sephora, you could be working with Lyft, you could be working with some of the world's biggest brands. You know, it's all about like, is your content great? Do you really care mm-hmm. about the brand? Have you been able to build an audience that truly reacts and engages with what you're putting out there? And, you know, I think to your example of like, hey, I just worked out. Like, if you think about influencers you follow who just create really great workout content or fitness content or do triathlons, you're going to pay attention when they tell you about a really cool new apparel brand or a really cool new, you know, piece of equipment that they've used. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay mm-hmm. a lot more attention than you are on like a TV commercial or just a normal ad, because it's someone you think, hey, they actually know what they're talking about. They're an expert in this area.
I love that you said that, you know, with the triathlons, because I'm a Team USA triathlon yeah. athlete, and I have worked with Nike and other brands, and you hit it right on. I mean, that you don't have to be like this huge name. And even putting my businesses aside, I really think I personally attract those brands because I show up consistently. I show up and tell who I am. And so mm-hmm. they want me to promote them. But here, and this is a good segue into the next questions. How do you make the connections for these brands? Because, you know, we've busted through the misconception. We have micro influencers, we have, you know, those that are showing up, putting out good content. But how do you connect to ensure that it's truly authentic output? I know for me, I get tons of inquiries on my athletic stuff. But if I don't run in those shoes, if I don't swim in those goggles, I mean, I may test them out and do a review, but unless I absolutely love them and use them consistently, I'm not going to push that out. How do y'all do that with, obviously, to connect people so that it is authentic and not just a paid for promo?
Yeah, I think your example touched on a really important point, which is if you don't love the brand and if you don't use their products, we actively do not want discourage you from doing any sort of partnership with that brand. Because, you know, just like I think what you're doing intuitively is like, you know, your audience trusts you. And if they start mm-hmm. to see that you're promoting products you don't actually stand behind 100%, you're going to lose your audience over time, and they're going to tune out. Because people are really smart, you know, and people know.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah, like we want people to say like, hey, like I'm doing this in partnership with this brand because I think they're awesome and I'm so excited to work with them because I love this product and here's why. And here's my story in relation to this product. And that's what gets people like, what gets audiences excited. And it really needs to be genuine and authentic. And if it isn't, it really looks pretty terrible online. I think we've all seen like really bad influencer marketing where you're like, okay, the woman does not use that detox tummy tea or that like waist trainer. Like, give me a break.
Right, right. So how do you as a brand, like I'm sitting here listening to this podcast, I'm like, okay, May has me sold. I know that I need to get in the path of my potential customers and I want to get an influencer marketing. How can the brand make sure that they're making those authentic connections? Because obviously you want to get your products into people's hands so they can test it. And like I said, I'm willing to test products all the time. It just will limit how I feel, you know, limit how much I put out there. How can a brand, I guess, the way I visualize it, they're on a fence of like, how do I decide to push out product knowing there could be little return? And how do I make sure that I actually send it to someone that is, we're going to be able to build a good relationship, or it's not going to blow up in my face that they're not just taking it paid for? Are there red flags or the things for the brand to ask or for them to look for in an influencer?
Yeah. So a big thing that we do is we really analyze the audience of the influencer. First it's authenticity. Does the person actually genuinely like your product? A great thing to do is look to see, have they posted about your product or any of your competitors' products previously? Do they have experience and expertise in your given vertical? Are they knowledgeable like in your field? So when they talk, will people know that like, hey, they're coming from a place of experience? I think that's number one, extremely important. The second thing is making sure that their audience is real, engaged, and cares about their vertical as well. So we actually will break down audiences based on, you know, do you have any bots following your account? If so, how many? Where do your followers live? What's their gender? What's their age range? What other brands do they follow? Just really making sure that we're getting in front of the target customer that the brand wants to be reaching. And, you know, I think a good example of that is you might have someone who's like a bikini model, and they might actually not be the best candidate if you're mm-hmm. a swimsuit brand. you know, because if they're followed by primarily men and they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, those guys aren't going to be buying bikinis. We might want to.
It ain't going to be me. I'm not that bikini model. So I can be the one that is connecting with the you know, the other moms.
You want to find your real audience and your real customers. And then the third part of it is like, you do need to test and learn, you know, and I think really working at a large enough scale so you can actually get results and see like, okay, when we worked with these five influencers, this really worked. When we worked with these 25 influencers, this is what worked for five of them and didn't work for these 20. Let's figure out, was it the creative brief? Was it the incentive? Was it the influencers we're working with? And you need to optimize just like you would with, you know, your search engine marketing, or your Google ads, your Facebook ads. There's a real level of tinkering and testing that needs to happen as well. And I think because influencer marketing is so new, that can be hard for people to hear. You know, they're like, oh no, I just want like the silver bullet. I just want to find like the perfect influencer right off the bat. And it's sometimes a lot more challenging than that.
Well, even as an influencer, and it's funny, even before this conversation, I never really considered it myself one, but receiving products and that being on the internet and that kind of stuff, there has been times, you know, my team and I sit down, we get all of these and they go, what do you think about these products? What do you think about this brand? Have you used them in the past? Like, we have a whole list of questions that we run through that they filter through, and then they'll send it along to me and we'll get some really obscure things, and I'll go, well, I don't think it's gonna be received well by the audience, but let me give it a shot. And if I like the product, then I'll at least commit to two or three posts, and then we'll see where we go from there. And then my audience freaking eats it up. And so it's all about testing, you know. If I just completely went on what I thought they wanted and not actually just tested it to see, I'd probably be turning away a lot of really good opportunities.
I think there's a lot of surprises, which is really, really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, so I guess I'm sharing this to encourage the brands out there that may be looking at some influencers. And you just gave a great framework of knowing like who their audience is, who they're reaching. And on that note, I think one of the things that I like to do when I'm also investigating a brand or wanting to reach out to someone like you, May, to come on the podcast, I want to see what is their online presence like. And you can look in their engagement and comments and see the type of people that engage with them. You said the one thing about bots, which I find is really funny, because since I have fitness related, oh my gosh, I feel like the fitness industry is like the worst for bots, especially on Instagram. And inevitably, within seconds of posting on my fitness account, it's all these bots. And so I always try to go and remove them, just because I don't want a brand to look at that and go, well, all she has is bot followers. So how, besides just comments, how would a brand determine how many of those followers of the influencer are legit?
So I think like one important thing is that there are just bots on these social channels, and some level of bot activity is to be expected if you have a larger following. So we usually say like, if you have over 10% of your followers look like they could be bots, like that's really a red flag. But if you're hovering around that like 8%, 10% or lower, it's okay, because there's a lot of garbage on the internet, and you know, the social platforms are just still trying to figure it out and are trying to really clean things up. So don't beat yourself up. I think number one, especially if you're not actively buying bots and you're not actively buying bot activity, you're most likely okay. I think it is great to just try to delete and block clear bot activity is a great thing to be doing, like you are doing. And the other thing is, we actually really run through a whole list of criteria, just like different flags that we would give an account to see if it's a bot or not. And some of them are kind of obvious. One, you know, do you have a profile picture? Does an account have zero or one other accounts following it? Because like bots aren't really going to, you know, have a lot of followers. Where in the world does the account originate? And there are certain countries and cities that have a lot more bot activity than others. And then, you know, do they have an engagement? Have they ever posted? Have they ever posted their own photos? And so just like a bunch of those just that we run through, and then we give a determination that's always approximate, but it can really give you a good sense of like, okay, this person, you know, it looks like they paid for some of the activity on their account, and we don't want to work with them.
I think it's funny you say that because right before, it was a couple of years ago, back when we were in the real world, pre-pandemic, I was getting ready to do some promotions with some influencers and I was going to run a marathon. And so I was like, well, let me clean up my bots. Well, I went through Instagram because I knew there were bots inevitably. And I'm like, and I did exactly what you said, you know, look for the country that it's in, the profile picture, but I went too fast and it ended up disabling me for like the entire time that I was like committed. So I had to go back to my brands and just be like, hey, let's just leave it. And then when it comes, you know, I get unlocked and I come back because, you know, getting a hold of someone on Instagram was like next to impossible. Yes. I was like, then we'll just do like a whole recap series. And so that was a good pivoting way because I was freaking out, which is one of the questions I want to ask you is I was freaking out because I had contracts with these, you know, whether it was formalized or they were like, we'll send you a pair of shoes if you post 3 or 4 times and, you know, share our hashtag. At what level do you think that a brand should be getting into these like official contracted long-term relationships with influencers?
So we do a lot of ambassador programs for brands and like long-term programs. I think it should always really start out, especially if you're a micro influencer. So if you have like under 75,000 followers, usually we start out with like a few tests to see if you should really be someone the brand is committing to on the longer term basis. But you know, contracts are in place just to make sure that everything is super clear up front and no one is confused because usually, you know, we're conveying a lot of information. Hey, here's a creative brief. If it's a shoe company, like what size sneaker are you and what colors do you want your sneakers to be? When are you going to get them? Is this like, you know, timeline for when you receive the sneakers to when we need you to post? Is that reasonable and feasible for you? Can we see the content beforehand so we can do reviews? Like there's a lot of things that go into it and it's a lot of work on the influencer side too. And we just want to make sure it's overall like 100% positive for the influencer and for the brand. So that usually means like writing up a bunch upfront so that everyone's really clear and no one feels misled at all. That's really like the worst case scenario is an influencer, you know, leaves a brand partnership feeling like, hey, that wasn't that clear to me. I actually feel really uncomfortable with what happened. You know, we don't want that. We want to be building really strong relationships between brands and people. And the space is so new that sometimes you have brands who have really unrealistic expectations or expectations that don't make a lot of sense for an influencer. Like, I don't know if this has happened to you, but you know, we have some brands who are like, oh yeah, we'll have an influencer post like 10 times over the course of the year for one pair of shoes. And we're going to want to see other content and do like 5 rounds of edits for each piece of content. So if you're an influencer with 10,000 followers, you didn't know you were about to get into like, you know, 25 hours of work for one pair of shoes. So just want to make sure that it's super upfront, clear. Everyone's really happy and excited about it. And then we measure it, see if it goes well, and then we'll keep working with that person if it goes really well. And if it doesn't, that was great. We tried it out.
And I kind of want to leave them in this little last bit because this has been really good information of like what could be the tangible first step if this brand has never stepped into influencer marketing before. What is kind of like the pitch? What I visualize is what a lot of people do. You know, they reach out, offer to send me product, and either it's a review or a variety of posts. But like you're saying, I'm not going to commit to 25 hours worth of work if it's something I don't even know if I'm going to like this product. I don't even know if I'm going to get to use it. What would be your recommendation of like what a brand could pitch as they're trying to dip their toe into this whole influencer marketing stuff?
Yeah. So I think a big thing is that making sure that you're setting up a test in influencer marketing the right way. You know, we have a lot of brands who are like, oh yeah, we tried influencer marketing. It didn't work for us. And then I'll be like, okay, cool. What did you guys do? And they're like, we worked with 4 influencers and each of them had 10,000 followers and they posted once. And I'm like, that is like, that sample size is so, so small. We can't tell you if it worked well or not. Like, let's work with 50 influencers or let's work with 100. Let's make sure they're the right people. So I think really having it be very upfront when you're a brand, here's what I want to get out of this. Here's how large of a campaign I want to do. And here are the measurable results I want to end up with. And if you can do that at the beginning, you're going to be in such a better place. I think a lot of times brands are like, oh, someone DM'd me on Instagram, so I'm just going to send them a pair of shoes. And then they set it up in a way that's not measurable at all. And so it is really hard to then go back and say, did this work? They're like, okay, we saw a spike in sales, but you didn't have any tracking on any of the influencers you sent shoes to. and, mm-hmm. you know, you sent them out sporadically throughout the course of the year, it's going to be really hard to tell like what worked and what didn't. We just know something happened. So I think mm-hmm. really setting it up, just like you would any other marketing campaign where you're trying to test and learn at the beginning, it's going to be really important. And then I think if you're brand new to influencer marketing, look at influencers who are already following your account and interacting with your account, mm-hmm. People who are already wearing and tagging your brand online. And then look at some of your competitors and seeing how much influencer work they're doing and what seems to be working or not working for them. And I think that's a great just like, you know, foundation to be like, okay, cool. Here's our space. Here's what seems to be working well. And here's an initial group of people that we should really start to think about to reach out to and start conversations with.
I like that because I feel like many times in the entrepreneur business building space, whether it's products or services, obviously products is more relevant here, but I either have to put myself as the business owner out there, or mm-hmm. it's more of like, let's build affiliateships. And it's not so much this influencer type approach. And I think many people underestimate the value. And this is what I kind of want to leave them with, is they underestimate the value of just engagement, just brand awareness, even if it's not going to directly impact sales, you're not going to see a spike, but it's getting that name repeatedly out into the marketplace. There is such great value to that. I know for myself, I take speaking opportunities just like you are with this, you know, to get your brand out there in front of people. There is some, you know, this elbow grease that you have to put in. And I feel like influencer marketing is a great way to give like this intangible returns. Of course, at the end of the day, we want to see a spike, but to build the brand awareness. And I guess I'm just giving y'all permission that are listening. You know, you're freaking out. You might be doing this like virtual learning from home with kids. I am right now, and it's a hot mess over here, and I'm wanting to take stuff off my plate. I'm looking at who can I have talk about my business? Who can I have that can be this influencer in their space to drive people to me? You know, my podcast does a lot of that. It is influencer marketing in a sense. And I just want to encourage all of y'all to look at this, take May steps that she's brought out here. This has been such wonderful information. Please re-listen to this. As always, we're going to have a thread in the Facebook group talking about this. I want to hear tangibly this week, I want to hear 3 tangible actions with a deadline of what you guys are going to do to reach out to influencer marketing. Even if you're looking at having a local business be that influencer, maybe there's somebody that is big in the local chamber of commerce, maybe they're big in the local community. That is influencer marketing. We're not just talking this national, international TikTok superstar type stuff. So I encourage all of y'all to dig into this. This has been wonderful. And if you are having any misgivings, go right back to the beginning where we talked about the frequent misconceptions. May did a wonderful job of debunking that. And I will put all of her information in the show notes page. As always, if you guys get to the point that you're just like, ugh, I know I need this, but I want someone else to handle it, I'm going to have obviously her site on there for you guys to check out at any time. And I will talk to all of y'all next week.
Thanks for joining Rachel on this episode of the Business Bites. For show notes, a list of recommended tools, or referenced episodes, you can find them at businessbitespodcast.com. Until next time.